So I'd just like to note that since I submitted the abstract, I've changed the title a little bit. I now have baseline characteristics to report for this during this presentation. We finished enrollment since I submitted the abstract, and so I can give slightly more interesting results. And I have no disclosures to make. So to start off, I just want to kind of give you a sense of the context here. I was working in Zambia, which, as you can see, is a southern African country. It's kind of in a transition area between southern Africa, East Africa, Central Africa, and there are influences from all those regions in Zambia. It has 11.3 million people, a per capita annual income of $470, so it's about $1.20 a day. And on average, people live to be 39 years old compared to 77 in the U.S. HIV in Zambia is very similar to the HIV epidemic in some of its southern African neighbors. So that means it's very high prevalence, highest prevalence region in the world, much higher prevalence in like East Africa, other parts of Africa. Southern Africa is really the epicenter of the epidemic. And then also the prevalence, it varies a little bit country to country, but prevalence overall is not decreasing, so it continues to just be a real big problem. In Zambia, about 16% of people, one in six people overall has HIV, although the prevalence is higher in urban areas. And I was based in Lusaka, the capital of Zambia, and in Lusaka about one in four people has HIV. All right, so I'm going to be talking about HIV viral load testing, which is just a lab test you can do, measuring the amount of HIV that's in a person's blood, so just measuring that on a blood sample. And the point here was to, first of all, kind of figure out if there's any utility to HIV viral load testing. So no randomized controlled trial to date has demonstrated that there's a survival benefit to of monitoring antiretroviral therapy, ART, which is just HIV treatment, with viral load testing versus other methods. Regardless, viral load testing is routinely used in high-income countries like the States or in Europe, and it's presumed to be helpful by the World Health Organization. So if you read the WHO guidelines about providing ART, they're a little bit vague, but they do say if you can do viral load testing, do it. You should do it. Even though there's actually no evidence showing that it helps. That it's never been demonstrated to help in the U.S. or anywhere on the planet. So even though it's done here, we don't know if it makes any difference, especially in terms of a survival benefit. In terms of viral load testing in resource-limited settings, it's pretty much just not done. In Zambia, there's not much viral load testing available because it's too expensive. In Zambia, last I knew, a viral load test was $25 or $30 versus a CD4 count cost $7 or $8. So when you're doing a population-level massive ART program, viral load testing has not been deemed to be something to invest the resources in. And then in resource-limited settings like Zambia, there are challenges in terms of identifying antiretroviral therapy failure. So it's just difficult to pick up on failure. It's difficult to, for a lot of reasons, it's just difficult to pick up on it when maybe your patient's not able to take their pills like they're supposed to, or they're developing drug resistance and the pills aren't working very well. It can take months before that surfaces in a way that you can identify. And this is where viral load testing might be able to help out. A related issue here is that there's this very delicate balance of having an urgent need to stop disease progression, stop people from getting sick, and to stop drug resistance from developing in patients, versus a need to proceed very carefully through your limited repertoire of antiretroviral drugs that you have available in countries like Zambia. So there's 24, 27, something like that, antiretroviral drugs available on the planet, like FDA approved. And 10 or 12 of them are available in Zambia currently. So you don't have all the options to work with. You can't burn through all your ARVs and then, have a patient that you don't have anything to offer to. So that's difficult. But at the same time, you need to be aggressive in identifying treatment failure when it's happening and move people through other regimens. So it's this delicate balance there. I wanted to show this article just to demonstrate, is from the Lancet earlier this year, a computer simulation study looking at trying to figure out whether we should use viral load testing, CD4 counts, or clinical observation alone to monitor people on HIV treatment in low-resource settings. And my point with this, really, I don't want to get into the details of their results, but my point is that all we have right now is computer simulation models. We don't have any hard data instructing us about how we should be monitoring patients on ART in low-resource settings. This particular study was using data from ART rollout in the San Francisco area in the gay community in the mid-90s, and extrapolating that, you know, seeing how the patterns went there to try to inform us about what we should do in resource-limited settings. And there's certainly value to that, but you can imagine there are also a lot of limitations and a lot of things that might not apply from one setting to the other. So the point is that we need hard, applicable data to guide our ART programs in developing countries. So that's where our viral load study comes in that we're conducting in Zambia. And the point of the study is to see, does monitoring ART with regular viral load tests improve survival? Does it decrease drug resistance? And does it decrease disease progression? So we basically want to see if there are these benefits to using viral load tests. And then if we demonstrate any of those benefits, we also need to evaluate whether it's cost effective and feasible for a setting such as Zambia. So first things first, we need to see if it's helpful. And if it's helpful, then we need to figure out exactly what's best in terms of kind of the public health approach to HIV in Zambia, in terms of where to put your money. So for methods, we are doing this study in 12 Ministry of Health ART clinics in Lusaka, so the public health ART clinics. And the 12 clinics are cluster randomized into two arms, so 6 clinics in each arm. There's the standard care arm, which is just the standard of care for ART in Zambia. It's the national, based on the national guidelines, which are heavily based on the WHO guidelines. So in the standard care arm, patients on ART are observed clinically, and then they get CD4 counts every 6 months. There is viral load testing available for when you have bizarre kind of case presentations and you're trying to adjudicate what, you know, what's going on if someone's CD4 count looks good but clinically they're bad, something like that. So viral load testing is available, but it's rarely invoked. Then the second arm is the intervention arm, in which we're doing regular viral load testing. So we do everything that we do for the standard care arm, clinical observation and CD4 counts, and then we're also doing viral load tests at baseline, 3 months, 6 months, and then every 6 months thereafter. The study was powered for mortality, so we're looking to see if there's a survival difference between these two arms, and we've powered appropriately, and we're doing 3 years total of follow-up. So the study is currently ongoing. The viral load study is nested within the National ART Program, which should hopefully optimize external validity and feasibility assessment. We've previously described our ART protocols and the electronic medical record keeping system, which are quite integral to the success of this study. We have a study nurse, a clinic assistant, and a data associate at each clinic, so we have 3 study staff at each of these 12 clinics. So that's 36 staff members out at the clinics, and then we have a certain number of staff members to cover, to float, for people on leave, and so on. So we actually have about 52 staff members for this study. Then lastly, we also archive plasma samples at baseline, 3 months, 6 months, and every 6 months thereafter for future drug resistance testing. We don't currently have the technology in Zambia to do HIV drug resistance testing, but it's in the pipeline. So that'll be a big part of this study down the road. So results, as I said, I have the baseline characteristics now, and that's all I have. I can't say anything beyond that, but we have 1,974 participants enrolled in the study. It took about a year and a half to fully enroll, so we started December 2006, and we finished this past May. And I'm sorry that the words get a little cut off on the left side. It was a copy and paste issue I couldn't fix. I'm sorry. As you can see, on average, the patients in our study were 35 years old. There's a predominance of females, 60% versus 40% males, which is very in keeping with the demographics of the African HIV epidemic. It's about 61% female. CD4 counts, you can see at enrollment, people's CD4 counts were 146 on average. 13.4% of people had less than 50, which, you know, we want that number to be as small as possible because those are people who are presenting much later in with their disease than you'd like to see. And then similar with the WHO staging, the majority of our patients were stage 3 at baseline. Stage 4 is the worst. So, you know, we want to, hopefully as time goes, you know, people will be coming in at lower stages. Then some baseline blood work, hemoglobin, you know, only 7.4% of people were what's considered severely anemic there. Body mass index, again, just 7.5% of people were considered quite cachectic. Creatinine was abnormal in 22% of people, and this is of increasing importance as tenofovir is used more and more because it can be, it's cleared by the kidney and so on. And tenofovir has been rolled out as a first-line agent in Zambia now for ART. It happened about a year ago. And so, you know, having a fairly sizable chunk of patients coming in with abnormal creatinines at the start is something that we definitely need to pay attention to. And one of my colleagues in Zambia is doing a lot of work about that and how it relates to using tenofovir, making sure clinicians are careful about this. And then liver function was normal in most people. Then just some information about the ART regimen that people were started on. As you can see, most people were on zidovudine, 3-TC and nevirapine. Another large chunk of people were on the very similar regimen with stavudine, 3-TC and nevirapine. And then at the bottom you can see that tenofovir was rolled out as a first-line agent partway through our enrollment, so we definitely have a chunk of people on that as well. And you can see that 16% of people were also taking TB treatment. And in terms of retention, we had 90% retention at 12 months, which is actually fairly far ahead of the curve. There was a PLOS review on retention in sub-Saharan African ART programs that came out last year, I think, and it showed that average retention at 12 months was somewhere in the range of 70%, which, as you can imagine, potentially sets things up for a big disaster in terms of drug resistance. So retention is such a critical issue in ART scale-up programs, and we've been able to be pretty aggressive with our follow-up, and so far so good there. Then after a median of 10 months of follow-up, 138 of our participants had died, and we'll be doing a lot of analysis to figure out predictors of mortality, early mortality, and so on. That's in the works. And then 118 had been discontinued. I'd like to point out that most of that's from people who move outside of Lusaka. We don't have the capacity to follow people if they leave the city of Lusaka and go to Livingston or the Copper Belt or whatever. So that's kind of a big issue for us that we're scratching our heads about. So to wrap up a bit, the viral load study in Zambia is ongoing, and I'm not able to comment on this yet, but it will assess whether regular viral load testing is beneficial, and if so, if it's practical and cost-effective for these settings, or whether regular viral load testing could cause harm by wasting resources and prematurely exhausting the ARV options that we have. So stay tuned for that. But we have demonstrated successful implementation of a scientifically rigorous study overlaid on regular ART practice. This is just the public ART national program that we're sort of embedded within, and we're able to get research quality data out of that. And, you know, we have all sorts of QA, QC procedures added in and so on. But it's possible to go into a big public health program and do scientifically rigorous work, which then should be able to directly inform those programs. So we're not trying to do pie-in-the-sky esoteric research here. We're trying to be able to directly inform the ART program in Zambia and in places like it, and help them figure out whether viral load testing is something that's going to make Zambians live longer and feel better, and if it's something that they should be funneling money into. That's the point. It's supposed to be very practical. And then I'd just like to finish up the acknowledgement slides. I'd like to thank, in particular, all the participants in our study, 2,000 people, who are helping us out an awful lot here, and then the staff. This is part of the 52 or so viral load staff that we have at all of our clinics. So thank you.
Thank you, Gina. Our next presenter is Melanie Gipp, and she'll be presenting Intersection of Services and Medical Education, Medical Student Involvement in International Disaster Relief After the Peruvian Earthquake in 2007. And